Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. And we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome back to the Backcountry Period Podcast. You got Cody and
Ethan.
Yeah, that's right. Ethan's jumping on an intro right here with me.
Ooh.
So this one we had Weston Homa. It was originally going to be a turkey talking episode, but we X-nayed that straight Western with Weston.
Yes.
As the title says.
Didn't mention turkeys once.
Yeah. So talk about what you need, basics for going out west hunting. The debate topic is, do we need one uniform law across the whole U.S. for regulating the hunting seasons? Colorado elk, hang on versus saddle.
Pennsylvania buck, potential Maryland buck.
Mm-hmm.
And literally everything that you need to go out west.
Yeah.
Is we break it down for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you should all, the essentials.
Yep.
That you should all, everyone should bring out no matter what, how important it is to test them out beforehand and to ask questions.
Yeah, I mean, it was really fun episode. It kind of like it got Western real quick, but it was awesome talking to him. And make sure you go follow along with him and his photography page. And remember to keep hunting,
keep fishing,
and keep your tradition. Maybe enjoy the process too.
Just a little.
Enjoy, guys. I'm really excited to talk to you because I like how, you know, you hunt out west and you bring that back to PA here. Like, I'm pumped to hear that because, we're not recording. I mean, we're recording, but we're not recording anything yet. We didn't start yet. But, like,
okay,
it's pretty cool because out west you think of, like, stalking.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's what I think of. But you bring that back here. It's going to be cool to hear what you do, how you incorporate that back here. It's going to be really cool.
Well, it's not so much the stalking. It's just more so the idea of just like backpacking in.
Yeah.
Getting in miles deep. And then just all the research and honestly, like playing the terrain.
Yeah.
Like I never really thought about thermals or, you know, things like that. Like hunting here growing up, hunting, you know, field edge.
Yeah.
On the back 40.
Yeah.
Because I do live in like, I mean, it's not mountains, but it's like hill country.
Okay.
Definitely enough hills for like thermals.
Right.
And like I played that real hard out west my first year going out. And then coming back here, and then I got more into the big public land hunting. And it's like, oh, all this is like the same stuff.
I kind of have a gist of thermals, like talking to all these people. Like I kind of have an idea of thermals now, but like where we are in Lancaster County, it's like we have rolling hills, not mountains. So like thermals, yeah. They still play a role, but yet they're not like the main thing you like take into effect. It's more of like the wind and hunting pressure and all that kind of stuff. Like when I go up north, like to Ethan's cabin, to Potter or my old cabin in Clinton, or even like if I went to Bald Eagle, like it's those are bigger mountains right there that I have to play thermals with too.
For sure. And I actually used to live out, so are you guys like in Lancaster? I used to live out in Westchester for a little bit.
Sorry for the interruption, guys and gals. Partners. So, Argrounds Coffee Company, you know him, you love him. Ed, he's in the process of putting his own roaster in his basement right now, which is awesome to be self-sufficient. He can do everything himself then, but he still has merch. His coffee's on back order, I believe, right now for a little bit. But go to his website, use BCPA. That'll get you 15% off your entire order. Forget Genetics. Forget Genetics is a local company to us here in Mannheim. It's out of Lebanon, Pennsylvania. Barry is grinding also. He is putting a lot of work in. He's in a lot of new stores. Go to his website. Use code BACKCountryPA, BACKCTRYPA. That'll get you 20% off your entire order. It'll also be in the description of the podcast if you forget what it is. Tideweed is a mixture of everything. They have heat, a lot of heated stuff. They have a rain suit. They're really nice. It's not your typical rain suit where it's all noisy and stuff when you walk through the woods or make any kind of noise, or you can hear yourself when the rain hits it. It is almost something you can wear even when it's not raining out. In the early season, you could wear it and you probably won't sweat as much, but you'll stay that just the right temperature to be out all day. Go to Tideweed, check out their blinds, check out their snake-proof boots. They actually are bite-proof, which I'm going to be getting myself a pair of those. They have a really cool backpack. They have a frame pack, too. Go check them out. Use code BCP18, and that'll get you 18% off your entire order every single time. New partner, and we are pumped and honored to be working with these guys, XOP. If you're in the mobile game, if you're into tree stands, you know what XOP is already. XOP has been around for quite a while. They're making affordable stands, sticks, harnesses. They have new gear coming out that's going to blow your mind. You've seen some of it on Instagram probably, if you probably follow them, but their one stand is going to be 6 pounds and their other stand is going to be 7.5 pounds. Both very affordable, under $500 before taxes and shipping, all that kind of stuff. But they also double as a frame pack as well. The seat sits level, so you can pack out your deer, you can put your backpack on the back of it, you can put your sticks on it. It's perfect for the mobile setup. These stands are mobile. They also have other stands. They're older stands. The one stand they have is 10.5 pounds. The other stand is like 12.3, and then you add sticks into there. Like, they're mobile, but yet not as mobile. But anyway, go check them out if you haven't already. Use code BACKCountryPA15 and save some money. Back to the episode. Thanks, guys.
All right, so right off the bat, do you want to introduce yourself to the listeners, who you are, where you're from, how you got into hunting? Pretty much take it from there?
Yeah, sure. We're going. Are we we're recording?
Yep.
Yeah. So, from my name is Weston Homa from southwestern PA, south of Pittsburgh. Grew up hunting, just that kind of family. Bunch of good hunters and outdoorsmen. We would have go up to deer camp every year for first day, just kind of like the classic, you know, PA hunting family.
Yep.
Really for me, and we did a lot of hunting just. I'm actually at my parents' house here, and we do have some property here that we got to grow up and hunt. So very thankful I was able to do that. I really liked the bow hunt mostly growing up, and just kind of being out there, especially when I was able to get out like on my own and sit out there with the bow. So just grew up hunting, but it really wasn't until, I guess, what was that, 3 or 4 years ago, when my dad and I went out elk hunting in Colorado. And then for me, it's almost like, cause I always enjoyed the outdoors and hunting and stuff. I don't want to say like I got away from it, but it wasn't like something that I think about every day and stuff now. And like, I'm truly passionate for. And I think it kind of going and hunting out west kind of lit like this fire in me, I guess, a little bit. And that is like my bread and butter, like the western hunting, even though I have been hunting a lot of deer back here now. But yeah, we would, and I guess the reason for that is like just growing up, we had like, you know, our one stand like on the edge of a field. And it was kind of just one of those things like you're just gonna, whoever can sit the longest,
yeah,
the most days, like that's it. Like that's the only way to do it. And they're gonna be there, they're not.
Right.
So I always loved like the connection to hunting and like, killing the animal and eating it, that whole connection. Like I was a big fan of like meat eater growing up, still am. But just that, if like that all being what it was, didn't really like excite me. Like I was like, when I'd watch Meat Eater and like Steve Rinella would really like, I mean, he'd be on like some crazy hunt and be so connected to it. And he's like doing a spot and stalk or looking for a sign and like really getting into it. Like that's what really excites me now. So, but no, nothing wrong with like hunting private or whatever and sitting on a field edge and you're laying them down. Like, that's awesome. Like, I just love seeing people being outside and taking it all in. But that's kind of like all it really was for me for like a long time. But, and we talked about this a little bit before we started, but yeah, so it's been, when I went and hunted elk out in Colorado, I kind of used the things I learned, and there's like a lot of work you got to do to like prepare for hunting like that. I kind of use that style and kind of like work ethic to hunt hard back here.
Mm-hmm.
So like this past year, I really sat a lot, in a tree between PA and Maryland.
Okay.
And I'm getting more towards like the big public land, either mountain hunting, where I was at in Maryland is some pretty big mountains. And then the hill country, like what we call it, is just like steep, steep hills.
Right.
So that's kind of like where I'm at with it now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you first got into it, was it primarily rifle with you and your family?
I always remember hunting with a bow. I mean, okay. I think the first few times going out, it was just, you know, with like my dad with rifle on opening day.
Okay.
And then we would go to like, our camp was basically on, I'd call it like pressured private.
Mm.
Like there was definitely a lot of other hunters there, but it was technically private and it was surrounded by state game lands.
Okay.
So like there was always a bunch, you're still fighting that orange army for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was like everybody kind of had their spot, like their tree, mm-hmm. Uncle's whoever is on like that ridge. So-and-so is like back in this bowl. So-and-so's here. And like, that's awesome and stuff, but there was never like a, you know, we're going to go down there and scout. We're going to go down there, play the thermals. We're going to run cameras. We're going to, and whatever.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of stuff I like to get into now.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm the same way because
like a chess match.
Yeah.
Like the woodsmanship, I guess.
Yeah.
Makes it more fun. I think
it does. It adds to the experience. Like you want to, cause like it's fun to go out there and to like, you know, to see deer, like you can sit in the same spot. Like when I was younger, when growing up, like I sat in a spot and like, you wait there for hours and hours and hours. And like you eventually see a deer at the last hour or like the last half an hour. And it like, it makes the whole day worth it. But now when you put all this time and effort in, it's like, if you sit there for hours and hours and don't see anything, you kind of beat yourself up because you put so much work in and it's just like, you want to succeed.
Yeah. And I just remember a specific memory when I was younger, sitting there with my dad up in a buddy stand, and it was like we didn't see any deer all day, and wind must have switched or something, and it was blowing right into these thickets, and like I just saw like flash of a horn and like a white tail just like go like a snort, and he just like took off.
Yeah.
And I think I even remember my dad being like, oh, that was our chance. I was like, you know, there's gotta be more to this.
Yeah.
Like, We gotta like rationalize this and figure this out.
Right.
So I don't know.
I wonder who the first.
Okay. I mean, we killed a lot of deer just like doing just kind of those things we were doing and stuff, and it was always so fun. But yeah, I just kind of like that next level of it now.
Yep. I sat in wooden box blinds like when I was growing up. Like it was always like, oh, I'm going to go to the middle stand to sit there. And my dad would sit at the other end of the knob, and my grandpa at the other end of the knob. And it's like we had the whole top, the ridge covered. It's like that's just what it was. And
And it's like, God forbid you get out of the stand
mm-hmm.
and look for sign during season.
Yeah.
Like I started doing that for bow season and I've learned so much. And I found a really nice scrape line on this ridge and I can't wait to hunt it there.
Yeah.
Like in the fall. And like you wouldn't see that because those scrapes might have came up right in like mid October.
Mm-hmm.
I was out there like in the third or fourth week. You would have never seen that
right
in the summer or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I find more joy in scouting than I do the actual hunt. Like I like hunting, but I love scouting more than I like hunting. Yeah. Like, I don't know why. It's just, I like to see where they're possibly going to be. And like when it all comes together, it makes it that much more rewarding.
Yeah. It's awesome, dude. I spent a lot of Saturdays I don't like to say like I'm just out there shed hunting, but I just been scouting.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do get lucky and find a shed, I'll try to find a match or like if I find an area where I think a shed might be like in a cut or something,
mm-hmm.
then I'll kind of shed hunt for a little bit.
Yeah.
But I picked up a good number of sheds and a couple of them, I just from the pictures of Ryan cameras all last year. Well, I was definitely able to identify one.
Okay. Sure.
And then possibly maybe these other one or two. It was just hard to tell.
Yeah.
But like, I thought like now, like getting bucks on camera, find their sheds and getting a chance to actually like hunt them,
mm-hmm.
like get on them next year. Like, I don't know. That gets me pumped.
I even find like just getting pictures of buck. Cause like, So when I first started hunting, I didn't have any cameras. Like me and my dad never ran cameras.
No.
And then like,
yeah, we
and when we started the podcast in 2019, I bought my first camera at Walmart while we were going up to my cabin in Clinton County.
Yep, I remember that.
And well, recently that one's been stolen, which is kind of sad. I wanted to like hang it up in a plaque or something like that and just like keep it right there on the wall. And but now I have like I'm going to have 17 cameras, and it's like when I first started, I didn't have any pictures of buck at all. I never got pictures of buck. Like it was always doe. I'm like, oh, I'm putting them on this trail. Now it's like all I get is like pictures of buck. And it's kind of like, I find joy in just looking at these pictures of these deer.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, yeah. Like if I was good at a camera, like I'd probably try and take pictures more than I maybe would shoot them. I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just cool to see these deer in their natural habitat and like watching them grow. Like, especially if you have history with one and you're watching it, like you see it at like when it's a spike, and then like there's one description on that face or detail on that face that you can tell when he gets older, and he has that same detail on his face the whole way up to like when he's like a 10 point from like a spike to a 10. Like that would be the most epic thing ever to just to watch that deer grow in age. And I can see why people like to watch these deer mature because of that.
Yeah, for sure. And I always thought it was funny people naming deer, like you'd see it on TV. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But now that like you start doing what we're talking about,
yeah,
I get why people name deer.
Yeah.
I mean, I still like don't, but I will say like, oh, that's that compact 8.
Yeah.
Or, like that's that wide 7.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I can't. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's Steve over there.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever give it a human name.
Mark.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But people, I don't know. People do that. And
yeah.
Whatever. I mean, it's not it's their thing.
Yeah, I don't get that. I don't get the whole human name on deer. Also human names on dogs, not really a fan of that, but yet like, you know, I guess all dogs' names could be humans' name at some point. Like Remy could is like, there's a few people named Remy Warren for one. So
oh, there you go.
Yeah.
My brother's dog's Remy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It took me a second. I was like, Remy, who the hell is named Remy? And then you said, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So for the debate topic, I had a while to think about this one, and I've just went back to work. So I've been listening to hunting podcasts more, and they're, you know, from different states, obviously. Every state has different regulations in every state. Like you can shoot 2 buck, North Carolina, you get 2 buck, 1 doe, Maryland and Jersey, it's like almost unlimited tags. Kinda, Ohio, you can shoot. I don't know how Ohio is, if you can, it's like spikes or what you can shoot out there, pretty much anything. New York is that way though. We can shoot pretty much brown and down. So for everyone here, would it make hunting better if there was one DCNR or one game commission for the whole United States where they made one group regulation where like you shoot, has to have 3 on one side, no matter what. Or just one brown and down through the whole U.S. Or do you think it should be separate how it is now, where it's like PA, it's 3 on one side, then for 95%, then the other 5%, it's like 3 up on one side, or Maryland or Jersey, like whatever. Like, what do you think?
Let me go.
Yeah, you can go. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Every state's so different, and not only every state, dude, like every part of the state is so different. Maryland's a great example too, because Maryland is such a diverse state with like its terrain. Like there's mountains on the west side, the east side, there's, you know, swamps in the bays. Those sika deer are down there. I actually did that this year, which was really cool. Didn't get one. My brother got one.
Yeah.
That was a cool hunt. But that's all, you know, swamp, like the ocean. And then I know you can kill a lot of deer I don't know. It might be unlimited. I don't know. But that those are the counties around like Baltimore.
Right. Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Yeah.
So like where I hunt, you can kill 2 bucks and 2 does.
Okay.
Which is, I think, basically most of the state or that western half.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't, only one has to adhere to the antler restriction, which is 3 on 1 side.
Okay.
And you can't kill 2 bucks in one hunting season of that year. So like you can't kill 2 with a bow.
Yeah.
Or you can't kill 2 with a, I think they have a separate muzzleloader and rifle.
Yeah.
They have to be indifferent, whatever. Mm-hmm. And only one has to adhere to the antler restriction. And then the, I think you can kill 2 does too. And it's mm-hmm. the same deal. So yeah, that's their rule for there, which mm-hmm. is pretty generous compared to what we do.
Yeah.
And then, you know, around near Baltimore there, they can lay them down as much as they want. Cause
yeah.
they have to, cause there's near such a densely populated area. So I don't know. And I think too, like, it just depends on just kind of that species too. I mean, I know deer are like different down south than they are up north. All the populations are being tracked. Deer like are more prone to CWD in different
right.
states. So they got to keep a close eye on that. They can't really like start laying them down there, but other states and parts of those states, they really need to lay them down
mm-hmm.
just to maintain good population numbers. Like I know Ohio had, what was that EHD?
Yeah. EHD.
I don't think it made its way to PA, but it looked like from guys mm-hmm. I follow on Instagram and stuff that really took a toll.
It did. Yeah.
So I don't know. I think over there, I've scouted there a bunch. I haven't hunted there yet. But I think it depends on what county.
Yeah.
I think they have like 2 deer counties, 1 deer county, 3 deer county or something like that.
Right.
So since there's so many variables, like with disease or what have you and things like that, like I think it's got to just be up to the state because
yeah.
every area is so unique in its own way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it would just make things so much easier if the whole U.S. was one, like you buy one U.S. hunting tag and you can use it wherever the fuck you want.
Yeah. No, I get it. Cause I hunt other states and stuff and
yeah.
going out west. I spend, cause I'm going to put in my Montana application here
mm-hmm.
next couple of days. I spent like a bunch of time yesterday. I read through the whole Hunter's Digest. Read and watch some DCNR videos. Like I'm real big on that. Like you're gonna go hunt these other states,
yeah.
you got to do your due diligence and
yeah.
read the rules.
Yep.
So I think a lot of people don't. They get there and then they get in a pickle.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it would make a lot of things easier.
Yes, it would.
One federal rule book, whatever. But
there's
too many variables and every area is too unique.
It's like one of those dream situations where you're like, I wish it could happen. Like, I wish it could yeah. happen. It'd be like a federal hunting license would be so nice, make everything so much easier. But yet also, in my mind, it's like, okay, I get it. I get why PA is a $1 state, why it's like you can get 3 doe tags, a max of 6, like, on your person. And then Maryland, it's like, you know, you can shoot 2 buck or, you know, unlimited doe, like, or earn a buck. And then Jersey, there are certain spots where it's like, if you shoot one a buck in the early season, you got to wait till like October, the end of October, till you can get another buck tag. It's like, some of the states I kind of question, it's like, okay, maybe those states that are connected to other states that have a better deer population, a bigger deer, all that kind of stuff, maybe they should follow each other. But then it's also, you get political with that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
yeah,
just,
yeah.
man,
I think,
go ahead.
I think the game commission, I think each state should be its own thing.
Okay.
Right? That's how I look. But I think the game commission for each respective state should be a little more, what's the word I want to look for? Autonomous? Is that the word I want?
That's a big fucking word.
That is. I was kind of scared to say it. I'm not going to lie. Make sure. I'm like, either I'm going to sound smart as shit or dumb as hell.
I'm going to look it up right now. Keep talking.
Please do. But I, because you see it all the time, like, especially like nowadays. You hear about like the politicians that are like, oh, we're trying to pass this law that makes trapping illegal in the state or hunting certain species illegal in the state, but like they have nothing to do with like the game commission or maintaining, you know, anything with conservation at all. They just go off of like, oh, people don't like it, so let's make a law that says that you can't do this anymore, with not listening to facts mm-hmm. and science behind that. I don't know. I think the game commission for each state should
regulate things.
Be more in charge.
Yeah, well, I mean, that is, like, the big problem. I think I agree. States should have their own rules and run their own show a little bit, but it's got to be the DCNRs and the game and fishes, like Fish and Wildlife's mm-hmm. department, not the political things. Like, you look at black bears right now.
Oh, yeah.
And for whatever reason, it's because people think bears are cute and cuddly, which, I mean, I love bears. Like, I love hunting them and everything, but they got to be managed just like everything else. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think if you're going to kill ungulates consistently, mm-hmm. I think you, like, might as well go ahead and kill some predators too if you're truly conservationist. So, and bear meat and tastes good.
Yeah.
And, I keep hearing that.
Yeah, I it's need good. To try and some. Rendering the bear fat and cooking with that is good too. So anyway, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've been keeping a close eye on it because they banned it years ago mm-hmm. when Governor Murphy took office.
Yep.
This past year, they opened it up.
Yep.
And it was the craziest thing because the news just came out in like November that mm-hmm. they're going to open up the bear season. And it's like, you already kind of, you're missing it. And then they're like, we're going to vote on it next week. And if it passes, they're going to, when was the season? Like in December or something for like a week? And then they were like, yeah. And they were like, if we don't, and then it passed, like they just slipped it in. And then they said, they want 20%.
Yeah.
Like harvest, which is like on par with like PA bear. And I think the deer is around like 25. That's usually the good balance line, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know. They barely killed that. Like it was only like a couple percent because they're already all denned up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then, I don't know. I like to read a lot and keep up with it because I'd like to. Because you used to be able to hunt them over bait there too.
Oh yeah,
that's a different, I guess, topic. But they have a lot of them, and it's a good opportunity to hunt them. But they did that, and now it's like a lot of people are like, oh look, there's not even that many bears there. Like we don't need a hunting season, and it's like I don't know what they were trying to pull with that there, but we'll see what they do next year. I actually have to look. I haven't followed up with it, but
it's almost like false advertisement. Like, you know, you see how many bear were taken after they open it up. It's like, oh, only like 5-4%. Like, you know, that's not what we thought.
They're
you know?
All, but they were all, it's December. They're all hybrid.
Right. Exactly.
It's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like, I
couldn't make it. My brother went out there and hunted, and then you saw a bunch of people hunting and no bears.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same thing out west, like Colorado. Years ago, did away with their spring bear.
Uh-huh.
Washington, state of Washington, all those states.
Yeah,
they're disallowing all the bear hunting.
Right.
Just I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it's
and if the population's low, and you know they need a bounce back, and like there's problems with like the environment for them and their food sources, all these things. I'd be like, you know, hunters, us, we'd be the first ones to be like, yeah, nope.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to hunt them if, you know, the population needs a little bit of a bounce back.
100%.
But if it's truly political, which it usually is with bears, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that's autonomous. You were right.
I was right?
Yeah, you're right.
Yes!
But, yeah, I mean, let the Game Commission decide based off science and facts because that's what it should be. I mean, that's what here in PA, that's what they're trying to push for because Sunday hunting. Like, it's very political right now with Sunday hunting. Of why they're not allowing it because the Game Commission doesn't have really full control of it to decide if Sunday hunting's good or not. Like, even if the Game Commission was able to decide that, they would still look at the science and be like, can the deer population handle this hunting on Sunday? Because that's another full day of hunting all throughout the year. So like it's, you know, they would look at that and be like, okay, the deer population can handle it. So we'll allow it, or the deer population can't. So we're only still going to allow 3 days. But once the population can handle it, then we will allow it. Like, that's the thing that the government's not really looking at because everyone's like, oh, well, you go to church on Sunday, the farmer's day of rest, all that kind of stuff. Like, it's, you know, there's, I don't know. The Game Commission needs to have control to look at the signs and the facts and then decide for the tag numbers, all that kind of stuff.
Because they're the entity with the biologists that are doing the population counts and studying like the food source and stuff like they're making the rules, but politically the politics get the final say.
Doesn't make sense. Andrew, what say you?
I kind of agree completely with Weston's answer. I think there's too many variables in different localities, so it should be broken up. Like, if you look at Pennsylvania alone, we got a bunch of different wildlife management units, and that exists for a reason. Like, not every population has the same nutrition, not the same access to certain resources, habitat destruction and disruption. So I totally agree. I think it should be localized, kind of like how the government works. Like, you do have that overarching umbrella, but then you give the autonomy to the states below it and then to the local governments. So I totally agree.
It was, you know, it's one of those things that people look at and be like, oh man, like, why can't this just be easier?
I know you always do it. I would totally want to play devil's advocate there and say, you know what, why not? And it makes too much sense. Like, why it does exist
that right way. Exactly. Because I mean, I feel like also, let's say if it was a thing, if it became a thing where like it was a federal hunting license, I could see a lot of things going extinct because people would be able or close to extinction. Like the numbers would dwindle a lot because, you know, it's so easy. Like you look at the elk out west, you know, like in Colorado, like it's over the counter there. Like, and they're thinking about, there's been talks about them getting rid of over the counter because of the number of hunters that are going out there now for over the counter. And I'm sure Weston, you can talk a lot about that because I mean, you go out there. So, I mean, that's, it makes it easier for people to go out there to Colorado because they can get over the counter. They don't have to put in for a drawing for it like here in PA.
Yeah. So basically, well, I guess my last thought on that kind of debate topic is like, you know what? At the end of the day, if each state has their own rules and there's certain ways of doing things, some rules are always going to be like silly or like, why are they doing that? But if there's like some due diligence that a hunter needs to do to like read about it, then that person's going to take the time to understand the rules and it's going to like enforce that, you know, that person's going to follow them because he has to read them. If somebody's too lazy to read the rules and stuff and they're just like, I'm not going, well, good. Like, good. That keeps the riffraff out. So that's how I look at it. But anyway, so hunting out west, like, pretty much anymore. And I'd love to, like, at the end here, I'll say, like, if you want to check out my Instagram, shoot me a message or whatever, because I look into, I research tags. This is like my thing.
Okay.
And any questions or whatever, just let me know. Because, so I'll basically, over the counter elk opportunities anymore is pretty much just Colorado.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Years ago, it used to be, you know, other states like Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. Okay. I mean, way back, it was everywhere. But
yeah.
Now all those other states are cutting it out. It takes you a year or 2 years to get points. All that's doing is pushing people to then go to Colorado, which creates even more pressure.
Right.
And then just becoming more popular, which I will always say is a good thing. Like people that go on and they're like, there's just too many hunters out there now and everything. I don't know. The way I see it, the more hunters we get, that's the benefit to all of us.
Right.
The more people we have on our side. But anyway, and there's still opportunities to be had. I mean, when I went out there, public land, DIY, over the counter, I had multiple opportunities to kill bulls, actually.
Right.
And these are the things that keep me up at night. Because I've called the elk. The first year I went out, we hunted the first firearm season. So Colorado has four firearm seasons. They go in and out through October into in November. The first year we went, you can only draw that season. And I think we burned 1 point, which means that's 1 year of waiting in line. So we did that the first year. And then the second year I went out there, we went into the second firearm season, and that's over the counter. So the second and third firearm seasons are over the counter, which literally means you can drive out there and buy the tag at Walmart.
Okay.
But anyway, that first season, I mean, I had opportunities on elk that first season. I was cow calling through the thick timber, see all these cows out in front of me. I was trying to like maybe slow everybody up. They were only about 60 yards out in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, gotta be a bull with them. And sure enough, I cow called and I just hear like this scream, like right around. It was like, I was going down this big drainage that was on this north slope, and it was just all thick pine and blowdowns. And I couldn't see the bull, but he was screaming. And I think it was the second day of the hunt, my first year out west, I got a bugling bull, like, right out in front of me.
Yeah.
And I just remember being like, oh, my God, this is, like, the most amazing thing ever. Like, I was like, I'm doing this forever. But I try to creep down closer to him. I'm kind of spooking the cows at this point. But I'm just trying to get that bull to, like, come back up and be like, what's going on, like, up here? So I kind of cow call again and give him, like, a little bit more, like, just, like, attitude with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he bugles again. So then I put my gun up on a rest on this blowdown, and he just never came out. Actually, another cow came out, and she was just standing broadside, just, like, wide open. I'm like, come on. But, yeah, I mean, I had other opportunities, too. Like, I had a bull at 600 yards.
Yeah.
Couldn't quite put the points on him. I'm comfortable shooting. Like, we would practice out to 500. I mean, that was a little bit too far.
Yeah.
I tried to go and kind of stalk him after that. Couldn't find him. Bumped elk other days throughout that first year. The second year, had a bunch of cows. Was barked back at elk. Like, elk will bark, like how a deer will snort
okay.
when they smell you. And elk will bark. There's kind of, like, two types of barks. One's, like, they kind of know you're coming around, and then they'll – or, like, there's a game going on, maybe you're calling to them, and then they'll just bark, like, and it's loud. And then that kind of just is, like, a show yourself. Like, all right, where are you at? What's going on?
Right.
And then there's another bark that's, like, more so, like, how most, you know, deer run off when they blow.
Right. Like,
they'll blow and run right off.
Okay.
So that's kind of that. But, yeah, I had opportunities there. I remember the one day, snuck up into the saddle. Took me all day to climb up on this ridge, and the wind shifted because I had the thermals coming down, but the sun was, like, out too high. And then when the sun's up, it's going to heat up that mountain. So then your thermals are going to rise.
Right.
So that scent's now going up to him. And I knew it was all thick and nasty up here. At that, it's just like mid October. The mm-hmm. bulls are done rutting. They like to break away and kind of get in their little hiding sanctuary areas.
Yeah.
So I was like that. This is, I was looking on a map and I was like, that's probably where I'd be. So I went up there, and sure enough, I get up there, but the wind was switching right before I was about to get to the very top. I kind of crest over. I hear just all this commotion, like about 75 yards out to my right. And before I can even get the gun up, I just see just bone, man. And it's a big bodied, like, I mean, when you see this elk out there, it makes the deer here just look like, I don't need, like... not that big, but and he ran off, took off, saw a bunch of other cows, had elk bark at me. But I guess my point to all those stories is, like, there's still opportunities,
right?
Like, even on an over the counter tag, like, there's a lot more hunters and it's getting tougher, but mm-hmm. if you pack in, which we do,
right.
My dad has gone with me each the last couple of years. We'll pack in a few miles, and then we set up a base camp, and then we'll be hiking all day early in the morning before the sun comes up, and just kind of work for it a little bit more.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah, so Colorado is kind of the last of it with over-the-counter mm-hmm. tags. It is getting so much more popular.
Yeah.
And pretty soon, it's kind of what I've been telling people, like, back here. Like, if you want to go hunt out west, like, and maybe you're dreaming about it down the road, a couple years down the road, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road,
mm-hmm.
dude, start getting these points now.
Right.
Because pretty soon the over-counter is going to be gone in Colorado. And other states now, it might take you a few years just to get the general tag. They're looking at cutting back non-residence tags.
Right. Because
the residents are, like, you know, getting upset too. All these non-residents are coming in. And I get
yeah.
it. Like, you're paying the taxes to the state. I don't think they should, you know, cut all non-residents out.
Right.
But,
yep.
you know, if you're living there, I mean, I get it. Like, if it was my state, I'd probably have that same feeling a little bit too. So
yeah.
I don't know. If anybody has any questions, feel free to contact me or whatever, if you ever want to go out hunting out west. But yeah, it's getting tougher, but you just got to do your research, and there's
yeah.
still totally opportunities. And it's not like you have to wait. I mean, some states have some units that take you 20 years to go get, but
mm-hmm.
that's the best elk hunting you'd ever have a chance to get to.
Right.
But like I said, you can get good elk hunting right now, still opportunities over the counter, but year or two,
mm-hmm.
of buying points, yeah, you there's still opportunity out there for sure.
Oh, and yeah.
And I love it out there. It's just, yeah.
So
love that hunt and have you out there, all of it.
Have you gone out for bow, or is it mostly just rifle when you go out there to Colorado?
So I did two rifle hunts for elk.
Yeah.
And then I did actually not make it out west last year because I got invited more or less, not last minute, but for years, these my cousins were trying to go on this bear hunt in Quebec.
Oh, okay.
And they booked it in 2019 for 2020, May 2020,
mm-hmm.
when COVID hit.
Yeah.
So got canceled then, and then got canceled in 2021 because you couldn't get across the border.
Right.
And then they had a guy back out, their one buddy.
Okay.
And they asked me to go. So we did a bear hunt up there and luckily got a bear up there. That was an awesome trip. And then this year, finally get to go back out west. We're definitely doing mule deer this time,
right,
with the firearm.
Yeah.
And that'll be my dad and I. I've been looking at this unit for a couple years now. Pretty excited. So we'll put in for that. And then actually this kind of unraveled about a month ago. And it's just kind of like guys from my dad's work, whatever, kind of just shook out like that.
Yeah.
We got an opportunity to go with them. I'm going to be putting in for Montana, and that'll be archery elk. So that'll be first year out there with a bow. And that's honestly where I see myself being, like, that's going to be my elk. But it's going to be tough because it's going to be, we don't have points. Mm-hmm. You still have a chance. The system's kind of funny, but it would take, it's too much to explain for podcasts, but you have a chance with 0 points technically. So we'll go in as a group and we'll see if we draw.
I've heard that with like group, you kind of have a better chance as a group than you do sometimes by yourself.
You do if there's guys in the group with points and you don't, and then they'll take a weighted average.
Okay.
Well, some, but you got to read because some take the average or some states default to the lowest guy.
All right.
You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Their system is like the quick and dirty is like they give X percent of tax and on residents for this general season draw. Mm-hmm. 75% of those tags are allocated in a preference point system where it's like, and I think the max points you can get for that general tag is 3. So if you got 3, you're the first group of people to get the tag, and then it trickles down to people with 2. And then to 1, and then to 0.
Okay.
Well, right now, it's like there's so many people putting in. Everybody that has 3 and 2 are going to get them. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened last year. And actually, if you had 1, you had worse odds with 1 than 0 because that's 75%. And then they give 25% to people with no points.
Oh.
So last year, it shook out to where if you actually had a point, you had worse odds than the guy – first year putting in.
What?
So,
oh,
I know.
God.
And it's like, it, and that's the thing. It's kind of like a headache to try to do the research and figure it out. But that's just what we've learned. So we're going in with no points and we'll probably have better chances than the guy, some people ahead of us.
Yeah.
But we'll see. That'll be fun. So I have an opportunity to go out the mountains twice this year. So I'm
that's jacked. Awesome.
We'll see.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Have you applied for PA elk here? Do you apply for them?
Oh, yeah. I've been putting in for, I don't know, maybe like last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I was just actually up there shed hunting.
Okay.
And just spent a weekend out in the tent and saw them. Like, I mean, they were just in somebody's yard. They're all down yarded up on private. And one big bull was still hanging on, man. Big 6-point.
Yeah.
A couple other elk with them. I was driving real quick. I couldn't tell if they were cows or just, you know, or they had already shed, but they're up there. You find a lot of sign.
Oh, yeah.
They leave a lot of sign and you feel like you're in it and just hiking the whole weekend and didn't get lucky.
Yeah. But I saw those pictures. That was pretty cool that backcountry camping in PA here. Like you don't, many people don't do that. Many people don't think of that in PA, that PA has backcountry hunting, but really, I mean, there's a lot of good opportunity to backcountry hunt here in PA. Like, up where my cabin was, like, you could walk for miles and not run into civilization. Same with Ethan's cabin. Like, you could walk for miles from his cabin out the door, and you could not go on a private property at all. And you could camp out there. Like, it's pretty cool. Like, no one really thinks of that in here in Pennsylvania.
And what I like doing it too is like I'm out there with my gear I'm taking out west too. Mm-hmm. So I'm testing it, I'm getting comfortable with everything, finding out what works, what doesn't work. And that's how I really started to up my whitetail game was mm-hmm. because growing up it's like, yeah, you got all that state forest, whatever. What are you gonna do if you get one?
Right.
You know, hike all back in it. What are you gonna do if you're way down in a drainage or whatever? Mm-hmm. And I remember actually when I moved out to Philly or Westchester area, and it was kind of just me.
Yeah.
I mean, we had some friends out there, but they didn't hunt. Like, my family wasn't out there. And it was the same thing. Like, what are you going to do? I remember people asking me, like, well, what are you going to do if you get one, if you're going hunting out there? And I remember thinking, like, oh, yeah, what if I get in a tight spot and I can't drag it out
right.
or whatever? And it kind of just, like, was like, no, there's no way. Like, I, you know, you got to figure this out. So when I got into Western hunting, what you do is, you know, you have your big frame pack,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to quarter up your animal, and you're going to pack it out. It doesn't matter how far you're in. So now that I've kind of taken some of the, like that lesson particularly and other lessons from Hunt Out West, brought them back here, that's what I do now. I'll pack way in with my frame pack and whatever I get down. I don't even really gut deer anymore. I just quarter them up. I find it to be just cleaner and quicker.
The gutless method?
Gutless. Yep. Yeah. So, because when I get home, I'm just laying everything out and I'll just butcher it right there.
Yep.
Or let it hang in one refrigerator we got here. I'm not feeling up to it or whatever. Yeah. But I did that this year. I got my PA buck. That actually was not on public. That was on our private
piece okay.
my dad owned. Because I grinded on public all through October and there was like a nice buck running around.
Yeah.
So I decided to sneak out like on a Tuesday after work one day. And I did get that buck here on private, but then I hunted Maryland during the rut as many days as I could. Had a couple smaller bucks. One really nice buck that's been keeping me up at night was at like 55, couldn't get a shot. And then I went back in gun season for a few days, and then I did kill a doe a couple miles back in.
Yeah.
I was way down this thing. It was right at last light too. I saw this group of does come through, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to not, you know, shoot one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just like at last light. I'm like, okay, it's going to be a long night.
Yeah.
So got her, packed her out or whatever. And I didn't have service or anything, but yeah, man. Just,
yeah.
You know, like, I just feel like now my world just opened up. Like, I
can absolutely.
Go anywhere, hunt anywhere,
yep.
Quarter them up, pack them out, good to go.
So let me ask you this. When you go into deep woods, like let's say you're going up to Elk County, hunting the big woods up there, or, you know, Clinton Potter, whatever. Are you ground hunting with your frame pack? Are you taking a stand in that had like doubles as a frame pack, or what's your, because you're out west, you don't take a tree stand out with you. Like,
no.
So are you doing that back here where you're just purely ground and pound? Or are you taking in a frame pack, a frame tree stand?
So gun season, I will.
Okay.
I will, still hunt on the ground pretty similarly like how I'll do out west.
Mm-hmm.
I'll glass a little bit more out west, or at least I'll try to if I'm in the terrain that caters to it.
Yeah.
But mostly just still hunting and just moving quietly. But when I'm bow hunting, I will take a stand. We've grown up with climbers.
Yep.
And hunting as much as I've been doing now, I'm done. I felt way too limited. And I'm looking at, I tried a bunch of saddles at the outdoor show, mm-hmm. and I just don't know if that's, I don't know if I'm feeling it. I'm going to try to check out some hang-ons.
We've had that discussion right before this podcast, actually. Saddles, this is very controversial, honestly.
This should be the controversial.
This should be another one. I think saddles are going to be X-nayed here pretty shortly. Honestly, I think people are going to get away from it because you look at these stands that are getting lighter and lighter, and they double as a frame pack as well. So, like, when you carry a saddle in, you're probably either wearing your saddle in or putting it in a backpack, and then you got your sticks, and you got your platform, if you take a platform in. And the frame packs they have, it's usually you can't put that on. Like, I have a frame pack, and you put the sticks and the saddle on there, and the it's too heavy. At that point, it's like you much rather get a hang on that doubles as a platform or a a frame pack, because then you just you have your sticks and everything on there, and with how light these stands are getting.
Well, yeah, we'll check this. So I guess this would work for a saddle with your sticks or hang on with your sticks, but mm-hmm. I was doing this with my climber because they do have the straps or whatever, mm-hmm. but I need that pack to pack the deer out.
Right.
So I'll actually slide, and I would do this with my – I think I'm going to go with the hang on.
Yeah.
And this is what I plan to do. I'll slide it. So, like, if you have an external frame pack, like, for hunting out west, mm-hmm. like, I'm a big fan of Kafaru.
Yeah.
I have, like, a frame from them and a couple of their bags. So I have, like, a big 7,000 cubic inch bag for out west. And then I actually have two smaller bags. But the one I'll use is, like, a 2,000 cubic inch one for here. And then so you have your external frame that goes on your back.
Yep.
And then you basically have what they call a meat shelf in between and then the bag. So I'll put – and I was doing this with my Summit. I'll just put everything between the two and then clip over, and then I can just carry it like that. And then on my way out, what I would do, well, I didn't have a stand when I shot the doe, but I would still be able to either like slide the meat still in there between it.
Right.
Or, I mean, if I really have to, I can do another trip. It's not the end of the world.
Right.
But, if I had to, you could fit everything in there together.
Yeah.
And then you still have like a backpack with all your gear.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, with how light these stands are now, it's like, because you have XOP has a 6 pound stand coming out, and they also have a 7.5 pound stand coming out. It's like, damn, like those are very, like they're light. And then you have the sticks on that. Like it's almost going to be a total of 12 pounds with stand and the sticks on your back. And then you have maybe a little bag. If you self film, you need maybe a bigger bag to put the arm in and the camera, all that kind of stuff. But man, like the stands are getting layer to layer. Like why would someone, if they're purely like looking at like, okay, do I get a saddle or do I get a hang on? It's like for the price, like they're about equal now. So it's like, which way do you go?
Yeah.
It's
just gotta be personal preference.
Yeah.
I know my Summit's 15. It's that one. It's called the open shot. So mm-hmm. there's no front rail. It's just the seat, which makes things a little lighter, but still I can get, I can be more mobile, mm-hmm. be in different trees, basically, that I can get into with a hang-on or a saddle mm-hmm. than I can with that climber. So I'm definitely moving on from that. But I don't know. I mean, there's things I liked about the saddle. The fact that, mm-hmm. like, you got everything in front of you
mm-hmm.
and you can totally spin around and everything, like, that was great.
Yeah.
But I just felt like, I mean, I don't know, dude. I got, like, with all the straps and, like, getting everything set up, like, that's a lot of time at the base of that tree.
Yeah.
And I felt like that kind of turns me off it a little bit. I'd rather just climb right up there and pull that hang-on up. And I don't know. And I got to do some more research this summer. But
yeah, I mean, I ran a saddle all last year. And my thing that I didn't like was that how everything is in front of you. I felt weird staring at a tree the whole time and having to move around to look around that tree. I was like, I felt like I was moving way too much. Like, I was like, man, I'm moving way too much with this. Like, even like just turn your head, like you're out there in the open, just turn your head around. Like, it's like, yeah, there's positives with it. Like, it is light. You can take it in, you can hang up it on almost any tree, but yet also personally, I feel like I moved way too much. Like, it was like, I tried standing there, like, just like still, like, and just looking around my head. And it was like, I got to look around this tree because you never know that deer's going to walk right in line with that tree somehow, some way.
You move your head
especially
around.
Especially if you got like, a big, like, oak, like you're in a big oak or something. If it's big, like, you are moving.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just, like, move with your eyes how you would usually, mm-hmm. like in a hang-on or something.
Yeah.
That's why I went with the hang-on.
Yep.
I was up. I would always put it up so, like, there's, like, a branch, like, kind of, like, to my left and mm-hmm. right. So I was like, the hang-on's kind of sitting in between them and everything, so I just looked like I was part of the tree, essentially, and everything was there in front of me, so I didn't have to, I didn't have to look around. If I wanted to look around a tree, it'd be because I'm trying to look behind me, but I'm not. I'm just kind of focused. I'd set it up, so I would hope all the deer that come around would be coming up, you know, from in front of me somewhere.
I mean, my favorite tree to get in is a pine tree, like the one I was up to your cab when I got the buck.
Yep.
Like to set up in a pine tree like that with a hang on, I think that's like a perfect perfect tree, if you can find that perfect pine tree that you're able to climb up in with a hang on and set it up there where you have these branches all around you and you're able to still see, you know, I think that to me, that's the best, that's the ideal tree to set up in for. I didn't set up one with a saddle because I tried and it was just so hard, like to get those sticks around to be able to climb up with the safe, with the lineman's rope around the tree, be able to climb up. Like with the hang on, I didn't use a lineman's rope to hang that stuff.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you would definitely need it for a saddle. Yeah. I don't know. I want to test some stuff out.
Oh yeah.
This summer.
Yeah, definitely. You have to test stuff out. I mean, that's the only way. I mean, you know, hunting out west, like there's, I'm sure that you tried other packs out there were like, oh man, this pack fucking sucks. Like I'm never using this again.
And there's so much more gear too. Cause it's not even like hunting gear, man. It's like survival gear.
Right.
Like we were out for 10 days. And so you got to have like, I like to say like, you got to have like your stuff tight, like everything dialed in, like your water purification, you know, your med kits, your sleep systems, your clothing, everything's got to be like dialed. And I don't know. I feel like some people just go out there and, especially from back east, without really testing their stuff and everything. And I'm just like, you're just setting yourself up for downtime. Basically you're taking away from your hunting time. Cause you're going to be messing around with like filtering water. That's taking you an hour. Cause your pump broke, but it should have took you just 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're not sleeping good because you brought the wrong rated sleeping bag. You didn't try it when it was cold back here. So I'm big on – I don't know. I'm big on that. And it's actually funny. My cousin was just – we were just talking on the phone last week when I was up there elk hunting in Elk County. And it was pretty cold. But luckily, my Zero bag held up good. I got a new sleeping pad, held up good. And he actually went out just in his backyard because he was like, I got this – he got a new bag, I think, around like Christmas time. And a couple months ago, because he's gone out west. He actually killed a nice mule deer. He went out solo trip. I think day two,
dang,
or first hunting day.
Yeah,
went up, killed a nice muley buck, packed it out, turned around, good to go. Man. But we're gonna try to plan some trips together too. But anyway, he bought a Zero bag, and he was like, you know what? Last weekend was so cold. I'm just gonna pitch this tent up in our backyard and I'm just gonna sleep outside and test it out. And he found that he didn't like it. The bag was like too tight to him, and you actually don't want like and same goes for like a puffy jacket or something, or like base layers. Like you don't want things actually too tight,
okay,
because it's actually, you're gonna lose the insulation value of like your layering system. So the bag was actually too tight. He actually felt like he could feel wind even like breaking through a little bit, or just like that cold air rather. And he didn't like his zippers. Like, it looked like a good idea. The zipper kind of came, like, out and around versus, like, you trying to maybe fight it.
Oh,
He was like, no, it was terrible. I hated it. Like, I'm sending it back. And I was like – and he was just like, yeah, it pissed me off. I got to find another one. I was like, no, man, that's a win. Imagine you pack in 2, 3, 4 miles in the mountains from your truck or, you know, no self-service, whatever, and you're about to spend your first night in – 0 degree, 10 degree, 15 degree weather, mountains, and you can't sleep.
Yeah.
Like you're up all night, you can't sleep. So now you're shot for the next day. You're going to sleep during the day when you should be hunting, or you got to pack out and drive hours to who knows where to get another bag. God hope that works. There you just lost a couple days. I don't know. So
that's a really good point. I mean, none of us have hunted out west. So like,
I wanted to ask that if any of you guys did, but
Midwest, Illinois,
like that's the farthest
Midwest. That's
okay.
The farthest that we went.
That'd be fun though.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was in late season. You know, it was. I think the warmest it was like 19 degrees, without a wind chill.
That was the warmest.
I mean, it was. You know, it was a good experience, but you know, none of us had hunted out west. I mean, the only Western guy we talked to is, I mean, when I first got on, we talked to a guide out there. And then also, Tim.
Yeah.
Tim, we talked to him. He went out there by himself to hunt solo. He got an elk out there, but like, we haven't really dove into, you know, what you should bring out west. And I think this, you know, when I first got you on board here, I wanted to do turkey talk, but now I think it's we're
I was gonna say I don't think we're talking turkey.
No,
that's fine.
No, fuck turkey. We're talking.
We can't get them anyway. So
we're talking Western now. This got real Western real quick.
Yeah.
So I think we just dive. Like, let's talk about this. Okay. What do you recommend? Like, so let's say one of us is going out west for the first time ever. What would you say for base stuff? What we need to go out there, or what, you know, to get us in? What's like the budget too? Because I think that's one thing that people look at. Like, oh man, my budget's this, but really it could be this. You know, like do you overshoot the budget? Kind of like you overestimate what it casts the cost.
Yeah. So. It's actually great because I have a buddy who's we're gonna draw the mule deer tags this fall, and my buddy is coming. He's starting to slowly pick up some gear, and he's gonna buy in the unit we're going to. You got to draw the mule deer, and you can buy an over the counter elk tag.
Okay.
So he doesn't have the mule deer points, but he's gonna buy the elk tag.
Yeah.
And go with us, and this is his first year, so I'm actually going through all this with him right now.
Oh, cool.
Not that I'm an expert, but I've done this for a few years now, and. I read a lot about all this stuff. I crank out podcasts all the time, and this is my thing. But anyway, so starting out, I would say you got to have your clothing system dialed, catered to your hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going out for an archery hunt in, say, Colorado, it's going to be hot. And up in those mountains, that sun is just killer. And you don't really – it's not really humid – so you're not really like just torrential in sweat as much. And I haven't archery hunted, but I've just backpacked in the summer out west in the mountains before too. So you got to cater it to that. So, but your first layer, and if anybody listening wants more information, I would recommend a good guy to listen to and to follow is John Barklow from Sitka Gear.
Okay.
And he makes a lot of whitetail stuff, but he gets really into the weeds of the technical clothing systems you'd need for whatever hunt. So you got your base, but say you're going out, let's just say like for what I'm doing, we'll be out there second firearm season. It's the end of October into November. I think we'll be out there for a total of, I forget what it is, 10 days, 11 days. There's 9 days of hunting.
Yeah.
So it's going to get cold. It'll probably be in the teens or possibly colder at night. It probably will warm up pretty decently during the day, but you want to plan for, you know, worst case or those coldest temps, especially when you're getting up in the morning and you're glassing on like a knob or whatever, it's going to be cold. So I think the technical clothing system is basically like base layers, mid layer, puffy jacket, rain gear. That's just like a high level view of it. And I don't think it, and then there's different materials, like there's synthetic, all those pieces you can get in synthetic basically. There's merino wool, and then there's also down.
Mm-hmm.
Each one has its pros and cons. Wool and down doesn't really work as well when it's wet, but it's super light and it doesn't stink.
Yeah.
Especially the wool, the merino wool is known for not really smelling as much, but your synthetic is going to wick all that moisture off all the time.
Okay.
But if you have a synthetic base layer, you're hiking for 14 days, it might smell a little bit. But honestly, I don't really. That doesn't really, you're not really playing that game with elk. You're always just trying to keep the wind in your favor anyway.
Right.
So that's not really as much as a fact. Like, you're not going to spray down scent killer or whatever for hunting elk, really. And who knows if that stuff even, that's another debate too.
How much
you actually believe in that anyway. But I would say, no, so clothing is the best. Do you have to get the best stuff? I would say, like, no, you don't have to spend. You don't have to go on Sitka and buy every piece I just mentioned because you're going to be thousands and thousands of dollars in the hole right off the bat.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say you need that because you're looking at every jacket's $300. Every pant is another $300, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say you would not want to skimp on a good puffy jacket in a cold season hunt. So like the main thing you're going to be doing is hiking around. And whenever you go to sit or say, God forbid, at night, when you want to fall and you're going to bed and you're still cold in your bag, you can just sleep in your puffy jacket. So, and I'd say spend more of the money on the puffy jacket and then kind of trickle down from there. Rain gear, just depending on where you're going to go.
Right.
Like if you're going to hunt like Kodiak Island or something in Alaska, I'd say get the best rain gear.
But, yeah.
You could probably get by on something a little cheaper if you're just going to Colorado where it's probably not going to rain anyway.
Yeah. Just in case. Just have it just in case pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Just get something that can roll up real small and you're good to go.
Right.
Start now. Then sleeping bags and sleeping pads. You don't have to get your first year the, you know, most expensive. I mean, there's bags that are $600-$700 that are, I mean, they're super lightweight, crazy, warm, -20 degree, but you don't need to get the, the lowest degree bag. You know, save yourself some weight, get what's rated to where you're going or to what it's going to be. And just so everybody knows too, like if it says a 0 degree bag, that's more or less the lower limit of the bag. Like if you're out there and it gets to 0 degrees, you're not going to be comfortable. So the comfort rating on a sleeping bag is usually 10 degrees higher than what it says. So 0 degree bag, the comfort rating is like 10 degrees. And how I look at that is like, if it's 10 degrees, I could probably just get by wearing like face layers or normal clothes or whatever. But if it's getting towards zero, you better have a puffy jacket or some puffy pants.
Yeah.
And sleep in that too.
Okay. So
I don't know. That's just something that.
That's a fun fact. Didn't know that.
Yeah, fun fact.
Yeah, really.
And then your sleeping pads are all rated the same too. Like the higher R value, it's called, which is like the heat retention value. That higher number is going to be better for your coldest hunts.
Okay.
The lower the number, you know, you can get by just like in summer temps, like 50, 60 degrees. You just got to pick one that, like, if you're around like an R4 to R5, that's going to get you by for most things. Like I run a, I just picked up a Therm-a-Rest R4.5.
Okay.
And I'm probably going to use that for even archery hunting out west. If I go to Montana in September.
Right.
And it'll still keep me warm enough for, end of October, Colorado.
Okay.
But, anyway, so that sleep systems, that's big. I would say you don't have to get the most expensive bag, but you don't want to get something cheap because that's like your last line of defense. If you can't sleep, like it'll be hell. Like it'd be the longest night of your life. What are you going to do? It's pitch black and you're probably coming out, like, unfortunately. And you just want to make sure you have good enough gear to where you're maximizing your hunting time.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. You obviously don't want to come off the mountain if you don't have to.
Exactly.
So I don't know, sleep system, so the clothes, and then I don't know. I wouldn't say you have to go crazy with the camos and everything, like the brands or whatever. Just make sure you're getting stuff that works.
Right.
And then everybody should have a good pair of boots, even if you're hunting out here. I mean, that's just a given. And then I don't know. I'd say there's a lot of water filtration devices that some might be more junk. Some might be a little better. They're not really going to cost you an arm and a leg. But I would say just make sure you're testing that stuff like before you go.
Right.
Because I'll do even trips just solo backpacking. And even in the summertime, like I just love going backpacking and looking at going to just new places.
Oh, yeah.
And I like taking pictures. Like I'm getting into photography here a little bit. So,
yeah.
I did 5 days down in West Virginia in National Forest.
Ooh.
At Dolly Sods area. I don't know if you've ever been.
I've heard of it before, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, super nice. So I had a water filter. I went to collect water like the morning of like the second day.
Mm-hmm.
I went to squeeze out of the bag and it squeezes through a filter and it was totally clogged.
Oh.
And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to suck.
Jeez.
But, could I walk back to the truck and then drove a couple hours or whatever, go pick another one up or something? Like, yeah, I guess. But I'm like, no, this is a good opportunity to, like, you know, get creative and figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my stove, my Jetboil stove, and I was just boiling water and then having to be patient, cool it down. And then I was putting it, you know, just in my water storage bag. And luckily that got me through the next, I was doing that. I had 4 nights out there. Just taking pictures and hiking and just taking it all in. But I don't know, those things could happen. So if that happened to you on a 10-day hunt, you're kind of screwed.
Right.
Yeah.
So lessons learned. I'm not using that filter system at all, because you're supposed to, things will clog if you don't clean them, but mm-hmm. I definitely cleaned it. I don't, so I'm not using that. I'm using a different system. I'm going to always have a backup system with right. me as well.
Yep.
So
yeah, I mean,
it the hard way, but those are the things you got to do.
You think about like the Indians and stuff like that, like they boiled water to drink it. So like that's, they yeah. didn't have any of these like filtration devices or even the hydro packs that you put in the backpack, like they have all that kind of stuff. So like that was a good thought by you to just boil the water and just make sure it's completely clean and then drink it. Like it sucks to do it that way, but like at least you're drinking water then and you're not like going without it or risking getting sick by drinking just water straight.
Yeah. And you just got to get creative in those mm-hmm. kind of situations. You can't just be like, all right, we're leaving. Cause if you have that attitude, you're probably going to do that on your hunt too.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. For the sleeping pad, could you use like a yoga mat? Like would that do? Cause I've seen people do that sometimes. Like, is that not a way you should go?
Definitely not for cold weather.
Okay.
Because what it is it's basically, so your sleeping bag itself, cause that's what people do. They'll invest good in a sleeping bag mm-hmm. and they'll skimp on the pad.
Right.
Not really realizing the significance of the job that each one plays. So people look at a sleeping bag and think like it's just like an oven that's on.
Yeah.
And you're going to get in and it's just going to like fire up and keep you warm.
Automatically be warm.
Yeah. Like there's people working in there like starting a fire for you or something. Yeah. That's not how it works. Like you want to, it's meant to hold the heat in.
Yeah.
So ideally what you want to do is you want to be hydrated. You want to maybe like right after you're done eating dinner, eating whatever. A lot of guys, like I've listened to, and I mean, I've done it myself because why not? Like fire off a couple push-ups or something. Like it's real cold, like get your body heat up a little bit and then dive into that bag. And then that's going to keep everything in. Actually, when I was up in Elk County too, just because I knew it was going to be cold, like I was fine, but it was one of those things I was like, why not just do this?
Yeah.
I boiled water, put it in my Nalgene, screwed the cap on, threw that in the foot box. Like in the bottom where my feet are in the sleeping bag. And it just kept all that heat in pretty much the whole night. I think I got up at one point later in the night and then I lost that heat out of it. But that's how a bag keeps all the heat in. A pad is going to insulate you off the cold ground. And if you didn't have that, you'd lose your heat through what is one of the, I'm trying to think back to those college days, like convection or whatever. So you want to block that as much as you can and have your heat just bounce back off that pad and insulate you off that cold ground. So really R value goes hand in hand too with the thickness of the pad. So you want a good thick pad too. But look at that R value number. It's always going to be written on a pad you go by.
Okay.
So if you're on cold ground and you have a yoga mat, you're immediately that all your body heat's going to get sucked through the bag and in that cold ground is going to penetrate into your system and you will be cold immediately.
Yeah.
I think anytime you would see that, it's people out in the summer doing it. And that's just more of a comfort thing. So they're not like on sticks or rocks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But hunting, especially, I mean, honestly, if I go archery hunting like early season in September, I mean, it gets cold at night.
Mm-hmm.
I'd still take something.
Yeah, I mean,
guys live out there can rough it out a little bit more, but they're getting all the reps in.
Right.
And they have the advantage to go and utilize that environment every year, all year. I like to stay on the safe side of things a little bit. Like, I don't want to, like, I have a 20 degree bag and a 0 degree bag. And if it's like showing in the teens and 20s, probably, I'm taking the zero. Why? I'm bringing the extra couple ounces. I'm driving 2,000 miles or whatever.
Right.
It's not worth it.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would do the same exact thing. Like, it's a couple ounces. Everyone, you know, is worried about the ounces now. It's like, I'd rather be comfortable carrying more weight and then at night be able to actually get sleep so I can carry that weight. Like if you're going with that 20 degree bag and then you're sleeping, it's like 15 degrees or 10 degrees out. Like, then it's like, oh my gosh, like this is not good. Like, I'm not going to get as much sleep as I would with the 0 degree bag.
Right, right. So you got to know kind of where to kind of cut things off or whatever. And you don't want to overshoot it. Like, you don't want to – I'll tell you firsthand, packing in 70 pounds for 10 days. Like, you don't want to overkill it. But, yeah, just try your stuff out and see what works, and then you'll be able to make good decisions. Like, you don't need 6 pair of underwear and 8 pairs of socks.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? That's the stuff you can – you know, you'll save weight by doing that.
Yeah. Because you can always turn the underwear inside out.
Yep.
There you go.
Same with the socks.
Same with the socks.
Turn them inside out.
Yep. Everything's fine then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do that all the time.
So you bring – so your main source of eating is probably like a jet boil water, to those meal, those freeze-dried meals, all that kind of stuff. What's your go-to freeze-dried meal?
Okay. So I've tried a bunch of different brands or whatever, and also different flavors. Because you don't want to, so we talk all about, the gear and everything too. I would make sure you're eating that food before you go out there too. You don't want to go out there for 10 days. You have 10 mountain houses for dinner and you go out there to eat one for the first time and you're just all backed up and then you're running to the bathroom the next day or whatever. Then what do you do?
Yeah.
Like, that's was your food. So eat the food before you go. I like, Peak Refuel sits pretty good with me, and Heather's Choice is a lot more natural things. Obviously, those things are going to cost you a few more dollars.
Yeah.
But I know I'd like to get into eventually. My dad and I have talked about it, investing in a dehydrator and just making our own stuff.
Yeah.
But I know. But anyway, you can. Those usually will sit better with some people, but still, some people just can't do it at all. But for me, they work pretty good, and I would say. I don't know. I had the Heather's Choice. What was it? Beef, bison, chili, or no? Ooh. Bison shepherd's pie.
Oh, okay.
Really that sounds good.
Okay.
And then Keith Rufio, I had. These are my favorites. I think the beef stroganoff is pretty good.
I feel like that's a go-to for a lot of people. Beef stroganoff, like that's.
Yeah.
That's like a real like. First of all, for the companies to make, it's real easy. You know, it's real easy for them to just put it in a bag and freeze dry it. Like it's great. But that's one thing, like I'm going to be getting a jet boil here. Cause like I want, when I go out, like even I'm hunting local here, I want to be able to just eat in the woods or go back to the truck, eat, and then go back to my other spot. Like I don't want to have to come home, then drive back out, you know, all that kind of stuff, or up where my new cabin's going to be around the Bald Eagle area. You know, like I don't want to leave the woods, go back to the camper, and then go back out. Like, I want to just stay there, do everything right there. Maybe under the base of my tree stand, make it. You know, it's, deer I'm might smell it, but it's, you know, they'll come around eventually again. You know, if you're in a good spot, they'll come around.
Yeah
they'll be like, ooh, what's for lunch, dude?
Ooh, I smell some beef stroganoff. Yeah. Walk over and check it out. Put some venison there. Take him back where he died.
We're going to see Cody up in the hang on. You're going to have the jet boil like on the platform, cooking the meal up in the tree, just sitting there like, I got this. Just don't drop anything.
I think the best picture would be like if somehow it would work, like if a deer walked by and I was shooting the deer at the same time, like if someone was there to get a picture of the jet boil between my legs and me shooting the deer.
The like myth. Boiling?
Yep.
Like boiling?
The water like overflows.
That'd be great.
Like, I gotta hold the bow there for like 15 minutes waiting for the deer to give me a shot.
It's like, captain's like, cooking dinner, like getting dinner while I'm cooking dinner.
Perfect. Oh, man. Awesome. Now, it somehow has to happen that way. I don't know how it has to happen. If Ethan, you have to set up down for me or what has to happen, but. We have to at least try it once.
I'll hide behind a tree and be like, oh, there's a deer. Come get ready with the camera and just start clicking photos off at you. Be like, just I don't care how big it is. Just shoot it. We need this picture.
It's a little fawn coming out. I'm going to send it. It's veal.
Do it for the gram.
Yes.
All right. So, oh, man, I had one more question. I had another question about that, too. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, coffee. Coffee's another one. When you go out west, I feel like you have to have coffee.
Yes.
Like, so what's your go-to coffee?
So I do Black Rifle.
Okay.
They are expensive, and honestly, I look at coffee as like, I really don't care what it tastes. Like, it's just fuel.
Right.
There's no day goes by where I'm not drinking coffee.
Yeah.
So I do like Black Rifle, and I actually will take it out there because it does taste a little better. But normally when I'm hiking or backpacking or going these weekend scouting trips or running around anywhere, you can buy those single serving packets just at any local grocery store of just like Folgers or whatever. And I'll snag those. Yeah. I'll even sometimes bring like decaf. Like I did that this weekend. Like it was just cold in the afternoon, and like I was just sitting around having a snack, and I was like, "Oh, a nice warm cup of decaf would be nice too."
Yeah,
so, yeah. Hey, they sell those single servings of those cheap brands.
Hey, we know a guy. If you want some coffee, we know a guy.
Good coffee.
Our Grounds Coffee Company. You know.
Okay. Yeah.
Check them out. Yeah.
I will. Check
I know. Out. See, my issue with coffee, like, you know, I make it, and then I got to go to the bathroom like 10 minutes after drinking it. With I don't know what it is. Like, honestly, like this is not a commercial. I'm not doing a commercial right now.
Oh, for, okay.
Commercial for our grand
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't have to go. Like, it's weird. But so what is something else you have to go into? Like, what's one thing you will not go in there without out West?
Oh man. Well, I guess on a more serious note, I will not go in without, a Garmin InReach or some sort of sat phone or something. Like, in all seriousness, like, if people have never done the out West before coming from back East, when you get out there and you're miles deep, it's no joke. I mean, you can get spun around, especially if bad weather hits, and I've had times like you get out there and you get so far back, you get this feeling of like, and it's got to be like primal a little bit, right? Of like, I'm away from like where like safety is,
right?
Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm far from whatever. Because a lot of times I will split from my dad too, and I'll just go kind of do my own thing, and or he'll go one way, I'll go another.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, everybody has ONX on their phone,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that, and base maps, whatever, and that's great.
Yeah.
You definitely want to bring your backup batteries to charge your phone and things like that. But do not rely on that and have that be your sole form of navigation.
Yeah.
And also what's great about those InReaches and everything, you can send a message back home. You have to pay to activate it, like a couple bucks, and then it's like a monthly thing. But if you're just going out West one time, definitely buy it, activate it. You're going to pay the month. It's not that expensive because there's like levels to the plan, but you can get unlimited like pre-text plan, just being like, I think I have one that sends to like my mom, and it just says like, we're good.
Yeah.
Or something like that. You know, you can send that, and that's like free. And then you get like X number of like custom messages or whatever. And honestly, at that point, I think they're like a couple cents to send one. So it's like, what are we talking about? So if anybody's going out there, like, that's a must. You must bring that. And actually, I would go even one step further. I would say, because everybody's going to have their phone, download the offline ONX maps. Definitely have the Garmin. There's like other brands too, but I think Garmin's, that's what I have. That's a good way to go. I would also go, one step further. Take some time to learn how to actually use a compass and a map.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And land nav a little bit. You should definitely have a hard copy map in your bag. You should know how to read it and use it. But even if you don't, you should still have it with you.
Right.
Just because at least you can terrain associate. Like, if you know, like, that's Eagle Mountain, you can find it on the map and at least have some sort of an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because also too, like, in a worst case scenario, somebody needs to come get you and stuff, and they're asking like where you are. You need to tell them where you are.
Right.
Let alone, you know, maybe sometimes or possibly getting lost. So I'm actually signed up to take because I just love learning too.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's reading, I've actually kind of turned into like a bookworm here the past like year or so. So I'm just loving the whole process of learning.
Yeah.
New things in the outdoors and reading and researching. I actually signed up for a land nav course.
Okay.
It's actually given me a few weeks. It's taught by like some military guys.
Yeah.
I don't know much about it or anything. Like, I'm going just me. I told my dad, I was like, I think I'm going to go this time just to make sure this is kind of like legit.
Yeah.
And then we'll definitely come back and do like a first aid course too, because they put those on as well. And I just think it's all cool stuff too, man. But I would say take some time. I mean, you don't even have to go pay to do a course. You can learn, and this is just anything from, if you don't want to read a book, too lazy to read a book, like, podcasts, YouTube, all this stuff.
Audiobooks.
Yeah. So I would take a little bit of time to learn how to read a compass and bring a compass and a hard copy map with you in case. Because phones in cold weather sometimes just quit on you. God forbid something happens to the InReach. And then, you know, you got to have that foolproof way of knowing how to get out somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. And ask questions. Yeah. Ask lots of questions. I've learned that over the last few years, how willing many people in the hunting community are to answer your questions about anything. Like, you're like, I want to know about this. You could reach out to damn near anybody, and they will help you the best that they can, or at least point you in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what's great about hunters and basically just all outdoorsmen, what they love the most is hunting and the outdoors, and the thing they love the second most is talking about hunting and the outdoors.
Yep.
So, I've reached out to people on Instagram, people that, like, have a large following.
Yeah.
And you just – and they'll message you back and shoot the breeze, like, you know, like no big deal, and reach out for questions. So
yeah,
it's all cool stuff. I think a lot of social media is pretty, like, you know, trash in the grand scheme, but that little bit of the ways to connect with people and learn and kind of broaden your horizons and be like even like if you're just having a hard time, like, you know, trying to get on deer, like in the fall, but you can look at so-and-so's profile and see kind of what they're doing and all the hours they're and the work they're putting in, and it's just like, yeah, maybe I need to do a little bit more of that, or I'll reach out to him and talk to him about this. Like, it's, I think that part of it is really cool.
So. It's growing the community more than like making it into an industry type thing. It's definitely growing the hunting community, which everyone's kind of jumping on board and working together now. It seems like it's kind of going that way more than it was the last year or two, where it was just pure industry-driven type stuff, and now it's more of a community-driven type thing where we want to see people succeed just as much as we want to be able to succeed too. Like, me personally, like, I feed off other people succeeding. Like, if Ethan or Andrew get a buck, like, when Andrew got his buck down, I was like, fuck yeah. Like, that was awesome. Like, when Ethan got his doe down, like, I wasn't there to celebrate, but, like, you know, I wish I would have been there. You know, like, I could care less if I, like, yes, I want to put meat in the freezer, all that kind of stuff. But, like, I want to see my friends and people who I enjoy spending time with succeed just as much as I would like to.
Totally. And I'm the same way. And it's just part of that process. You guys talk about that too.
Yeah.
It's just, it's more the process than, you know, how much bones on its head.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing I think people should take out is maybe do you take a little first aid kit out with you as well when you pack out?
Totally. Okay. Yeah. And a little quick tip for that, I would say, obviously take a first aid kit, but do not go buy one, throw it in your bag, and think you're good.
Yeah.
Know what's in there and know how to use it and know when to use it and make sure you have, like, the right stuff. Like, if you're going for 10 days and you don't, or even 5 days or whatever, you're out in the mountain, like, you're, you know, out there in the mountains, like, a million things could go wrong. You could like slit your arm skinning an animal. Mm-hmm. You could cut yourself on a broadhead. You could break your ankle. You could, you know, get hypothermic. You could get sick from, like, a million things. People do that. I mean, it happens every year.
Yeah.
But so you got to know what's in there and know that you have the appropriate stuff to take care of any of those things too. So, I would actually like to look for, like, a course like that as well, just because I like doing it. But, you can learn a lot from YouTube, podcasts, and things like that. When you do finally get a little bit of that knowledge, then go purchase your med kit.
Yep.
Lay it all out. Review everything. Then before you go, do that same thing and make sure you're like, okay, if this happens, we're good here.
Yep.
If this happens, we're good here. It's like, you know, if this happens, we're going to use this. We don't need to use this until this happens, whatever. So I wouldn't say I'm the expert with that, but I'll definitely do my due diligence before we go.
That was my biggest fear. We went out to Illinois the first day out there. I'm climbing up the tree and I slip off my climbing stick and my finger slices open, like a big piece of skin's just hanging there. And I don't really realize until I'm up in the tree. I had no band-aids. I had nothing on me. So I literally took toilet paper that I had in my bag and just wrapped around my finger. And that was it. It was I'm okay, I need a first aid kit. Because, like, what if you're gutting this deer?
One. Yeah, for whitetail hunting.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I'll carry a little one. Because that's the thing for out west, though. Like, if that happens, you get that bad cut.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long way to get you to a hospital or wherever.
Right.
Yeah. And ideally, if there's a way to stop it and make sure you're good, you want to do that.
Right.
You don't want your 10-day hunt cutting down to 2 days.
Yeah.
And that's a whole year. That's so much money in gas and yep. tags and buying points. Like, it just, yeah, I don't know. I try to put all the odds in my favor as I can before
yeah.
I go. Because, yeah.
I completely agree with that. Like, a first aid kit, I would put up there with a Garmin and then go down from there. Like, obviously, like, buy the Garmin, the first aid kit, and then keep going down the list. And then, like, be like, make sure you have just go down and check that list off.
Yeah.
You know, one by one.
Yep. All that stuff in there. Leuco tape is another big one I'll just okay. give out to everybody.
Yeah.
It's basically, it's like a little bit better than moleskin, and it sticks a little bit better, and you can, like, cut pieces off.
Yeah.
If you ever feel like you're getting a little hot spot, put that on there immediately. And that's going to save you, because if you get a real bad blister, I mean, it can happen where, like, you can't even hike
yeah.
for that long. We're ripping your boot off. And then there you go. That's wasted hunting time.
Wow. Yeah.
So, yeah. Leuco tape. That's a good one.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you said you got a buck down on private this year. So walk yep. us through that hunt real quick before we end the podcast okay. here.
Yeah. So I was spending all last spring, summer, and up until end of October on public land trying to get it done.
Yeah.
And this was my first year being like, I am all in. Like, I had pictures from all the summer. I had bucks that I was like, I'm not going to say like I had a target buck, but I right. definitely had good target areas that I was like hunting hard. Learned a lot. Had actually two good bucks that I was about to come to full draw on, but one winded me and another one just went off in these thickets. And then it was getting towards, it was Halloween actually when I killed it, but getting towards that time, my dad did tell me he did see like a good buck running around, and I really wanted to hunt Maryland too. And not that I'm against hunting private land or whatever. It was yeah. just like, I want that experience. I want to put all that time in. And I feel like I learned a ton.
Mm-hmm.
But I did end up sneaking out a couple days after work, out on this private. So I get out there, I run home, get all my stuff on, and it was raining all day, and it quit in the afternoon, but it wasn't supposed to rain again. Well, I get out there and I wasn't wearing rain gear or anything really water. I just had some light pants on, and then just like my Sitka Stratus jacket.
Yeah.
And then it started raining, and I'm just like, come on. yeah. But I was like, if I can give this like a good, I think it was like an hour and a half till dark.
Yeah.
I was like, if I could just wait this out for a little bit, or no, it might not have been that long till dark, but I was like, if I can just wait this out and that rain quits right before it gets dark, I know I have a good chance of something happening. Like, something's going to get up and move, because it's been pretty much raining all day. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, someone's got to get up and eat or whatever. So luckily, before I think I had a good half hour left before shooting light, rain quit. I hear immediately something getting up to my right. This buck comes out, and it was actually kind of hard to see him at first, because it was still like just this mist and like starting to get like in the low light. And I actually was able to throw my binos up real quick. And I live in the 3-up side of the state.
Okay. Yep.
So I saw his 3-up on his left side, and I was just like, okay, sweet. So he keeps going out, and he keeps going out, and he's not really looking at me. He's kind of like doing like a bigger J hook.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to draw, or I draw back, and I stop him. Meh. And just broke the shot, whacked him, just let things go for a little bit. And then actually called my dad, just like we were doing, like, you know, growing up. I called dad,
yeah.
Okay, don't go anywhere, don't go anywhere, I'm coming. Like, we'll give it time. And I just knew, like, I thumped him. So, because I just saw blood spewing everywhere. And he kind of, like, hooked back in, took me a little bit. I found the arrow covered in blood. I think I was a touch back, but he was like quartering away.
Okay.
So I definitely caught, it looked like lung blood. So I definitely caught at least one lung, but definitely all liver. And like I said, I do the gutless method anymore, mm-hmm. so I actually didn't even cut them open. But it passed, so it passed through there, and it was a loud smack. And I knew I didn't hit the front shoulder, but it actually passed through, hit the back shoulder. And when I was skinning them out, my broadhead was actually back through the back scapula. So it passed all the way through vitals, through the back shoulder, and everything worked really good. The arrow, so that was still stuck. What I found was like half the arrow.
Okay.
The arrow broke off and fell out of him after he started going. Then blood started really going. I don't know. It went about 40, 50 yards. And he actually was like hooking, and he's kind of actually kind of closer to where my stand was.
Yeah.
And I can't believe I didn't really see him like once we found him, how close he kind of was to the stand. It was pretty neat. But he ended up being – so I saw his three up, and we knew we had this one pretty good buck running around. I mean, we don't really get the big hammers or anything. But I walk over to him, and then I see, like, the three, but then I see two, and then I don't see a brow. And I'm like, wait, what is this buck? But so he ended up being he's a six. His one busted.
Yeah.
And then he just didn't have the genes for the brows yet or whatever. But yeah. He was nice. He was a nice buck. And like I said, I don't even really like would score deer. Even really. I just think if it's a good representation of the species, like I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, if it gets your heart pounding, like that's what matters, honestly.
Oh yeah, dude. I was all jacked up.
Yeah.
And then yeah, I went and hunted Maryland hard for the rut. It was really that second week November is when the action really started happening, I noticed, because that first weekend was warm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of stunk. And then I was able to like take one more day off work, so I made it like a 4-day trip. And actually for that one, just camped out, and then not like at my stand,
right?
But, I was able to actually kind of truck camp, but slept in a tent for the 4 days, wherever, hunted all day sits, and a couple young bucks. I actually passed on a little, because one doesn't have to adhere to the antler restriction, mm-hmm. like I said. I didn't want to shoot this little, just this little probably yearling. And then a couple other bucks just further out, a few does. And real quick, I'll tell this one.
Yeah,
story.
Go ahead, man.
Because this was new public for me. I scouted so hard in the spring, summer down there too. And I was just really kicking myself that I didn't get this buck. So I think it was that Saturday, like the 13th. I'm sitting there. It's like 9 o'clock. And I'm up on this ridge, but there's just kind of this like big dip up there, and it was kind of like the mouth of like a drainage that came up, and then it's just this little like dip in the terrain, and one side of it is pines, and the other side where it goes up, it flattens out, and it's just like a maybe 6-year-old, 5-year-old cut.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like real diverse terrain. You can see kind of where they're traveling through. Ran cameras there, had good bucks on there, but it was a transition area, so it was good, but there was multiple ways for them to kind of go through this these bedding areas and stuff. So I picked a spot out of that, and like I said, saw some deer, but really my big thing this year was I hear all this noise, something running down. It's these three does just running hard about like 60 yards behind me, and they're running hard like something's chasing them, and I'm like, okay, here we go, something's about to happen. But they run behind me, like back to my left, and then like up over, like up into the cut. And then I don't see like anything behind them. And I'm like, oh. I waited a few minutes and then like nothing. I'm like, well, there's got to be a buck on them or something. Like
yeah.
They're not just running just to run. And I was like, I should move. I remember listening to a podcast with and I think he might have been on here. You guys talked to Ryan Glitzky?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I think – that actually might have been how I found you guys. I listened. I like a lot of like how he hunts mm-hmm. and things like that.
Yeah.
So, and I remember him saying this, and I swear I think I listened to the podcast episode on my way down. He talked about this scenario, and he said like, you know, if that happens to you, you see does running like that, the buck's not right on him, like he's coming, and move.
Yeah.
Like, do you see that move?
Yep.
And I was just like, it was just part of me that growing up being like, I can't get out of the stand. Like, what do you mean? Like, especially during the rut, like, I can't get down. I can't. Sure enough, it was about like an hour later. I mean, this buck is all rutted up and he's just coming down this hill. And I'm like, oh no. Like, cause I know he's locked down. He was locked like face in the ground on those does, but he comes down on their scent trail and I'm like, all right, I gotta do something. And I'm actually all like spun around in the stand. And I know he's going to keep going to the left, so I actually spin around and grab my bow and look back this way. And it's actually all, like, more thick over here. So I just hit, like, a grunt at him, like, hard. Like, meh. And he's just still going. He actually, like, turns a little bit, but I think he's just trying to pick up their scent. I don't think I was really getting him to me. But he got closer, and I get to set up to draw, but he's moving fast. I give him another grunt, but he keeps kind of going on their scent trail. And I was like, I don't know, I got to try something. So I just gave him a hard snort wheeze.
Yeah.
To try to just get him to stop and just look at me or something, but nothing, man. He was locked down. I think as close as he was maybe 50, like upper 40s or 50, but right. He was moving, locked down. Like, you can just see it in their eyes, dude. I could have probably screamed at him. Like, hey, he still would have been on him. But, dude, lesson learned. I mean, that was it. I had that buck on camera. He was a big, like, big eight. And, yeah. I had him on camera in September, early September when he was still in velvet. In October, right at like first light, just him. And then it was funny. It was almost like 4 weeks on the dot each time.
Wow.
And then this was like the second week of November. Wow. He cruised through too.
Damn.
Yeah, that one hurt. I was like, you got to be kidding. I knew what to do and I didn't do it.
Yep. You didn't listen to your gut there.
But yeah, it was an awesome experience.
And man.
Yeah, so a couple other little bucks running around, some does. Like, I still look at it as, like, I mean, this was hunting hard like this, big public land, all the scout and everything. I had a ton of deer action this year, especially on the public I hunted in PA.
Yeah.
And I'm really starting to put it together. I would say anybody wanting to get some more info, if you guys, anybody listening, pick up Mapping Trophy Whitetails by Brad Herndon.
I believe that's right. Yeah.
It's all about hunting deer, like, and utilizing wind and terrain features. Have you guys ever heard of that book?
Yeah, I heard of it. It's hard to find. Very hard to find on Amazon.
Really?
I think it was through like some weird seller or something. Yeah. It is hard to find.
Yeah.
It's an older book.
Right.
But I used that and actually didn't get it till later in the season. And it was kind of one of those things where it's cool. It's like if you kind of go to, like, I wish I would have read it before, obviously, before the season, then hunted. But it was cool to, like, go do the thing and then read about the thing.
Yeah.
Because then it's just like, oh, that makes so much sense. Or, like, oh, this area is, like, conducive like, to that, too. And I don't know. I'm just excited to get back in these areas next year.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a great book. And, it's just all about using the terrain features and wind and things like that. Because because growing up on TV, dude, like, besides Meat Eater, like I said, I like watching Meat Eater. It was like people hunting over these food plots like out in Iowa and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's awesome. That's your thing. But like, that's just not – it just doesn't get me like this jack. Like, I kind of like that woodsmanship of it a little bit. So
100%.
That's a good book to get started.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, that I love the story of the private buck. Like, that's cool. And then the experience you had in Maryland, like, that's an awesome experience. And all the information you dropped about hunting out west, someone's going to listen to that. I mean, eventually when I hunt out west, I'm going to use all that information and take it in and be able to buy the stuff that to be successful, attempt to be successful out west, you know? But yeah, it's been awesome talking to you. Where can people follow along with you and reach out to you if they have any questions or anything like that? And I think you have a photography page too, right?
Yeah, I do. So both on Instagram. I'm pretty much just Instagram. At Weston Homa. It's just my name. And then my photography, which I just run a point and shoot right now. It's not like a big DSLR or mirrorless because it's kind of an expensive hobby.
Yes.
But been getting better with it. There is like a little bit more of a science to it than people think. Mm-hmm. But I really do enjoy it. It helps like tell the stories from like these trips and stuff. That's at Wild West Photography or at wild.westphotography, I think. It's in my bio on my main page if you want to follow along with that too. But I am looking to actually really get into it more. I think I've saved up and I've had like a big full frame camera and a few different lenses in my shopping cart on this photography website for like over a year now.
Yeah.
I think I'm finally going to like pull the trigger.
Yeah.
So I tend to get a lot more into it and probably post more on there too. But yeah, if you want to follow me along, and literally I love talking all things hunting, whatever. I love connecting with people. I love learning. learning from other people. And I like helping people out, especially for the Western stuff. I know it can be a lot. And, yeah, hit me up, DM me, any questions, whatever, follow along. Yeah. I just like connecting with people.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what I want to get more into, yeah.
Absolutely, man. Well, it has been awesome talking to you, and we are really appreciative of you coming on here and talking all things Western about with us, and tell us about your season, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully you can have success next year, too. And hopefully you're able to get that Maryland buck down if he's still around.
Yeah,
I know. I'm going to be busy this fall, man. I got a lot of tags, so it's going to be great.
Sweet. Well, best of luck, dude.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you guys.
Yep. Have a good one.
Gotcha.